Welcome back to Housewarming, your inside look at real Irish homes transforming for a greener energy future. I'm Kim Buckley, and this week, to close out the season, we're back with architect Dermot Bannon. I chatted to him about sustainable design and what he sees the home of the future looking like. I then headed out to Blanchardstown in Dublin to visit the home of Wayne Kavanagh. He'd been living in his house for around 10 years before a chat with some neighbours led to him going down the road of a full energy upgrade. First though, let's chat to Dermot. Are people getting obsessed with open plan? And I know it's maybe a trend. And when someone is renovating their home, are we to avoid trends or just go with how
Why
you live?
Why is open plan a trend?
Just because it's popular now and everyone is striving for open plan, whereas I'm seeing online that people are closing up their homes again and okay, so you know, it's going through phases. So should we adhere to trends or...
See, I don't see open plan as a trend.
Okay.
So like,
it's a way of living, I suppose.
Yes. Like the reason we had small segregated rooms, we'll have this now. This is a good opportunity. Thank you. We had small segregated rooms because, you know, the kitchen was a small, dingy room, and the dining room then was where the family sat down. Or it would have been maybe from the Victorian times, where the grand dining room was the big thing. So everybody was trying to emulate the grand dining room. So it was all about kind of keeping people in segregated rooms because, like, men didn't cook.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody would go, you know, it was segregating all of the purposes. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, for living rooms, people want to be in the hub of the house,
yeah,
and they want to be together, and they want, and that's generally the kitchen. So they want a small seating area.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have the dining table. Nobody wants a good dining room.
Yeah.
So this, how houses are, like, they evolved from caves.
Yeah.
To, you know, towers, to kind of Norman towers and all that. To, we'll go right up to kind of Georgian homes, which had no bathrooms.
Yeah.
And were all had fireplaces in every single room.
Mm-hmm.
To Victorian houses, which had a little scullery at the back and, mm-hmm, and a good dining room and a good sitting room. To houses in the 1950s, where maybe there was they knocked down one wall and you might have had to combine. To now, it's just modern.
Yeah.
It's just modern. Modernizing, I nearly said modern, and who says that is Hugh Wallace. But it's just how we live is evolving, mm-hmm, in the same way clothes have. And like, you're not going to go out in 1920s or say 1880 style dresses down to the ground,
yeah,
where showing your ankle was seen as obscene.
Yeah.
Things do move on,
yeah, yeah,
and they're not just trends, you know.
Yeah.
So open plan living is how we live.
Mm-hmm.
Two people out to work every day, picking up kids from creche. You want to be in the same room. You, if the kids come home and you watch your cooking TV, or you're cooking your dinner and you want the TV on and kids are watching that,
yeah,
for a half an hour, or somebody's, it's how we live.
Yeah.
It's really handy to have a separate room. And I think that COVID threw that up. So
yeah,
somewhere to go and have a Zoom call, somewhere,
yeah,
to go,
mm-hmm,
and have the phone call in the evening time. You want to ring mum or you want to do whatever. That's or just to be by yourself,
yeah,
to watch Netflix.
Yeah.
But the good room is gone.
Yeah,
you know, people don't come in and sit down in the sitting room and wait for the trolley to come in with tea on it.
No.
And that's the only way to bring a cup of tea.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah.
People will go straight. Most people that go to your house will probably make their own cup of tea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and you want to be like cooking and entertaining while they're there. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Or just not. It's not a fuss anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
if you want fuss and all that, you go out for your dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but if somebody's coming to your house, they generally will help with the wash up. Good dining rooms, it was never about that. You sat there and you got served up and you didn't care how it was made, where it was comfortable.
Okay, you know, so open plan is the way forward and it's going to remain. It's
open,
not a trend.
It's the how we live.
Yeah.
It's, mm-hmm, not the 1800s.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. But I get asked this all the time, like, when is open plan going to go out of fashion? It's not.
Okay.
It's like, if you look at the modern movement in architecture, like the, you know, Bauhaus movement and Mies van der Rohe and Corbusier and all these kind of famous modern architects, they were just designing open plan places, spaces from the 1920s onwards, because that's how we live. So it's not a trend.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way of living.
Okay. In terms of renovations, but is an open plan space less energy efficient than small rooms?
No, because basically the way the way a really energy efficient house works is like an envelope.
Mm-hmm.
So really what you want to do, like, I remember when we were doing our house and I was talking to to the energy consultant, and he was like, technically, the most energy efficient houses shouldn't need radiators upstairs, so you should be using whatever heat is downstairs to bring it to heat the upstairs. But the most, like a passive house, right, which is the ultimate
energy dream. Efficient,
that is like an envelope, and then the floors, the walls, they're just internal partitions. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that your roof, your walls, and your floor is warm, and then it doesn't really matter. So that if you've got one, like a passive house will have one little small heater in the corner that will heat the entire house. Mm-hmm. So no, like a bigger room is actually more efficient because you'll have more people in it. You'll have airflow between the two. So there's this misconception that small rooms that are individually heated. Soon, what happens there is that if you've got a warm space and a cold space, like I remember my granny's house when we were growing up, and we used to go down there and spend the entire summer down there, and we're still even freezing in the summer. Mm-hmm. But there was a fire going in a small living room in the middle of the house, but at the doors, right? Have you ever been in an old house?
Yeah.
With an old...
I live in one.
In a living, but what's coming out from under the doors?
Yeah,
from
drafts,
the hall?
Yeah.
Drafts. Mm-hmm. So you get this gush of air, and you're trying to move chairs away from the drafts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same principle goes with small rooms and big rooms.
Yeah.
If you've got one small room that's really well heated, but all the rooms around it are freezing,
yeah,
you're getting an air pressure change, mm-hmm, and the air rushes from one space to the other, and then you get drafts. And then there's places to sit. You don't want to sit there because there's a cold draft on your shoulder, there's a cold draft in your head. The ultimate is to get the entire house at an ambient temperature, so that when doors are left open, like, or things like that, and air is flowing from one space, it's all in one temperature.
Yeah. And I was going to ask about you and your life, but I already know that you live in an open plan home.
I
because
do.
You've
yeah.
done a quite a passionate speech there, Dermot, about
Did
open
I?
Plan living. Yeah.
Was that passionate? Sorry.
Yeah, it was passionate. Well, you're passionate about it. And yeah, I'm convinced now. Not a trend.
It's not a trend. It's a way we live. Unless you like to live in a Victorian style, do you?
No,
have you got
I don't.
Are you one of these lifestyle people?
Like,
do you dress up in life? Long cloaks when you go home.
I don't, Dermot, no.
Yeah, so if you want your segregated rooms, do it to go all out and wear the clothes from the 1890s.
And no men in the kitchen.
No men in the kitchen, yeah.
So Dermot, over to you now and how you live. And obviously it's an open plan home.
Yeah.
But how, and obviously your home is quite energy efficient.
Yes.
Because,
it's
it's
an A2 rated house.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. And that's probably the most sustainable thing you can do is have an energy efficient home. But how else are you sustainable in your day-to-day life, Dermot?
Oh, God, wow. That's a big question. In everything.
And how, like, as in, do you shop antique furniture? Do you wear secondhand clothes? Do you buy and sell on adverts.ie? Like, do you have a keep cup?
I do. We've loads of keep cups. Everything I do is a decision. Is how it affects the planet, mm-hmm, and I am really conscious about throwing out stuff, about getting rid of stuff, and how I combat that is obviously you donate stuff to charity shops, you give them to people, but I don't buy. Mm-hmm. I don't buy stuff that I don't need.
Yeah.
I don't I go clothes shopping once a year. Mm-hmm. Because I kind of have enough. I consume less. Now, some of that could be just down to my cranky old age as well. But I, so every decision I make will have, like if I buy a toothbrush, like where is that going to go when I'm finished with it?
Yeah.
I let one tooth go really way too long during COVID, and then
a toothbrush.
A tooth.
Oh.
And I ended up having to get a root canal.
Oh no.
So now, and this is what bugs me still, right? I have to do these little interdental things.
Yeah.
And you throw them out after a week.
Yeah.
And that annoys me.
Okay.
Annoys me that has to be thrown out. But I'm fastidious now when I go to recycling and I'm putting, I won't let the wrong thing go into the wrong
bin.
The wrong bin. We clean out, again, you know, if you spill a bit of oil on something that could have been recycled, you know, you get a takeaway, that annoys me.
Yeah.
So it's about the mark that you leave behind. I have an electric car.
Yeah.
How
do you find that?
Love it.
Do you have solar panels?
No, not yet.
Are they on the list?
They are on the list, yes.
And they'll be able to charge your car?
They'll be able to charge the car. So the car is sorted. What else we do. I try not to print stuff. If I don't, I try and read it on the screen. Even yeah. I used to have an awful habit of printing out stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I see no paper here with me
very
now.
Good, okay.
All up there. What else do I do? It's recycling. Like the easiest way to kind of avoid waste is just not to buy.
And how about interiors? Is that something you're into? I know you're an architect, but how about like the soft furnishings?
Yes.
And are you passionate about that? And what about antique furniture? Is that something you're interested in?
So the way I would consider sustainable living is to buy something, like say for example, like the biggest and most expensive pieces in your home mm-hmm. are things like couches and dining tables and all of that. I would buy the best quality that I can afford mm-hmm. and try to hang on to it for the rest of my life.
Okay.
Like we have a couch, and I remember myself and my wife, before we got married, we bought our first house before we got married, and we really wanted this couch, and it was down in a showroom in Paris Court.
Okay.
There used to be a little furniture shop in Paris Court, you know, where the waterfall is.
Yeah.
And we used to go down there, we'd go for a walk, we'd get our lunch down there, and then we'd go up and we'd visit the sofa.
Aww.
And we didn't have enough money for it.
Yeah.
And we kept looking at it, and we sat on it, and they must have noticed us in the shop, and we said, look, whenever there's a sale on, and gave the number. 6 months later, we got a phone call. I said, your couch has been set aside for you. It's half price.
Oh.
Do you want it? And we went and we bought it. And how many years ago is that? So it's 27 years ago.
We still have it.
Maybe it's not 26 years.
Okay.
We still have that couch.
Wow.
And it's there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's and still love the shape of it. So that's where you avoid trends. Like
yeah.
on your big items, on the big purchases in your home, try and get something really simple, really mm-hmm. neutral.
Yeah.
And something that's for people who aren't that confident in it, like things like design classics. Like I have a lovely, one of the things I bought when we got the new house was an Eames chair, with the ottoman.
Yes.
But that's
like
it.
Frasier.
That's a design classic.
Yeah.
That's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like I've told my favourite child, which
is it the chair?
No. I've told them you take that. Tell the other two it's not worth anything.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Because I paid for that and saw that as an investment. And with some furniture, like if you look after it, you'll sell it for more.
Yeah.
In 5 years. So just buy stuff that's really well designed.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest way to do that is to kind of go and buy stuff that was designed in the 1950s, 1960s that are design classics.
Mid-century modern.
Mid-century stuff that is, sideboards. Again.
G-plan.
Yeah. But they're all design classics.
Yeah.
And so if you can pick them up and have them for the rest of your life,
mm-hmm.
buy some, what is it? There's that saying, don't have anything in your home that is not either incredibly useful or incredibly beautiful.
Okay.
Don't have rubbish. And
yeah.
we do. And a big thing that I see it all the time is people doing up their houses for the communion, the confirmation,
oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
the Christmas,
right.
the whatever.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, people would kind of redecorate and
mm-hmm.
throw out a lot of stuff every 5 years.
Yeah.
I think hopefully we've moved on from that. Buy the best that you can afford and something that you really love and wait. Like wait for things.
Yeah.
Like we had one couch.
Go visit
and
the couch.
We got a bigger house. We had two areas that we could sit. We sat. I used to buy furniture in auctions, but like 30 quid.
Yeah.
Like I'd go in and I'd spend 30 quid mm-hmm. on a sofa, and that would do us until we could afford the one that we really wanted.
Yeah.
I wouldn't kind of buy something as an in-between thing.
Yeah.
Because where does that end up?
Yeah.
Landfill.
Okay.
You know, so, and then I donated. Like if we're to go to the serious stuff as well, like our house we have smart thermostats, so the heating is always regulated. Other things I do turn off the shower now when I'm putting the soap on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, just to save water.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I turn off the I'm just conscious all the time. And
yeah.
it's not because I'm being frugal. It's more that I do think of water, especially if you're leaving the tap running,
yeah,
you know, you're thinking of countries that how much it costs to
yeah,
clean
yeah,
that water
yeah.
for the country, because
yeah.
we don't pay for our water.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking somebody is paying for
okay,
cleaning this
yeah,
water,
yeah, yeah.
and then I'm just wasting it down. So I hope that everything I do in life, I'm thinking about the mark or the footprint that I'm leaving on the planet,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to leave the lightest footprint that I possibly can, and Lots of people think that's a waste of time because it's only just me. Mm-hmm. So what difference does it make whether I do it or not? It does.
Yeah, because if everyone is doing the same thing, then it's going to make a huge difference.
If we all do our own little bit and think about... And I will carry the shopping out.
Yeah. If you don't have a bag.
If I don't have a bag, and I'll have it all, and I'll drop the cans on on the floor, and I'll
that's your punishment now.
Yeah, I always remember, and I thought it was we did a series a few years ago called Incredible Homes. We went to see one of the richest plastic surgeons in Sweden.
Okay.
And we all got lunch brought in because we were filming all day, and one of the production people went out and they got lunch for everybody, and we said, and it was all in cartons. Mm-hmm. And this guy, who you think, like, you know, you'd associate really, really wealthy guy, that he doesn't care. He spent a half an hour when we were finished sorting, scraping, cleaning. And in Sweden, like, they have bins for everything.
Yeah.
Like we have three bins. So you've got your compost, you've got your regular, and you've got your recycling. They had about nine bins.
Mm.
Like, and it's like, I love when you go to, and he said, what's this bin? And I was just there. He's not doing this for money. He's not doing this to save money. He's doing this because that's what they do.
Yeah.
And I suppose when you go to countries where, like, it's a lot harder to live because of weather conditions and, like, getting a bin lorry up snow driven, like, they understand how hard it is to live a disposable life, that they just don't. They try and reuse and recycle, and visiting these countries and seeing how a lot of the Scandinavian countries do, and that, like, somebody told me once that, like, even as a student over there, and this is going slightly back more, like, as somebody who sets up their first house, they'll buy a design classic, and because they'll know that'll be worth more in a couple of years' time, and they'll sell it then instead of getting. If they want to change out stuff, they'll know they'll have a load of stuff that they sell. They think about the mark on the planet in some of these colder countries an awful lot more than we do.
Yeah.
So I think, but I do believe, like, people do think it's, oh, sure, what difference can I make? You can.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a massive difference.
What does the home of the future look like?
Oh, that's. That's it.
Are they all A-rated? Are they all passive homes?
Yes. But it's also, where do I go with this? Because, like, it's not the home of the future. It's the homes of the future, right? If we're going to be really sustainable, we need to bunch up, right? We need to live in cities. We need to live in towns. We need to rely less on cars. We need to, it's like, We have a little bit of obsession in Ireland with the field and living in the countryside
road
and having
frontage.
The big garden and the road frontage and all that, which I get and I understand, and it's lovely. But, you know, our population is going to grow in the next 50 years to something that is unimaginable for Ireland, right? We are now, but, like, it's no, like, UK has, what, 52 million? We're up at 5 million. So we've a long, and our islands are not that dissimilar in size. We've one of the least densely populated countries in Europe. But I think as our population grows, and if we're talking about sustainability, we need to have better cities. We need to have better public transport. But we also need to have denser cities. And when you've got denser cities and more people living there, you will have much better facilities. You'll be able to walk to work. Like, I'd love, for me, the home of the future is that we all live in a 15-minute neighbourhood.
Okay.
So that within 15 minutes, you've got all the shops, your gym, your school, secondary school, universities, hospitals, doctors, workplace, that you can live in a neighbourhood that has everything that you need to survive. That would be my dream.
Okay.
Because with that, then we've less of reliance on cars. We've less of, if we're living in denser, like, apartment buildings, and, like, and everybody, there he is about his apartment buildings. But, like, I've been to places like America, and I've been to Scandinavia, where apartment buildings are great.
Mm.
You know, they have proper storage, they're decent size. And then you got great parks, and you got great public realms, and you got great all. Like, that's, to me, is living, is when, you know, it's when you've got everything on your doorstep and you're not spending hours upon hours commuting, because that's carbon emissions, and it's also roads, and it's
wasting time,
and it's also doubling up on everything.
Yeah.
You know, you've got 100 supermarkets when you only need really 20. Mm-hmm. You know, it's much more efficient for us to live in cities, but our cities need to get better.
Yeah.
And we need to create much better parks. We need, like, you go to somewhere like Copenhagen and it'll make you cry for how much we need to catch up with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, parks everywhere, really kind of an enjoyable walk to work. Like, how many people can say that they're getting from their front door to their office is really enjoyable? Not many.
Not me anyway.
No. Where That for me is a utopian vision. Okay. That for me is that I'm bringing kids to football and it's a lovely walk. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing cities are wonderful places to live in, you know, like, and there are, like, Paris is a lovely example. Like, would you go into, like, and like, oh, what, I'm off on a track again, but like, I went to Paris a couple of years ago and all the photographs I have are of parks, right? And they're of one specific thing in a park, and it was, there was all these benches and chairs that were just there, and you could move them around, you could carry them around. So in one area there was 20 chairs all bunched together, and you could go there and meet your friends and organise them in a circle. You could sit by yourself and people watch. But it wasn't the fact that there was chairs, it was the fact that they had such respect for their parks and their public spaces. And that's what makes living in a city and makes living, you know, together really nice. Again, our Irish towns, our small villages and towns are amazing. Like, a lot of them will have market squares. They're all turned into car parks now. They'll have amazing kind of street edges and shop fronts. We don't live above the shop anymore. We don't live. But like, there's so many opportunities in Ireland that we have that have yet to be tapped into. So I think, yeah, the A-rated house, and that's part of it. But I think what we crave now are communities.
And connections.
Mm-hmm. And coffee shops and places to meet people. We suffered a lot during COVID, and I think one of the things that craved during COVID a new watch. Nobody craved a nice pair of jeans. We craved connection. Mm-hmm. When everything was taken away from us and it was all gone, what rose to the top was the human connection, the kind of the meeting, the gathering. I often put it down, like, look at us. We are an absolute disgrace when somebody like Taylor Swift comes to this country as we clamber over each other to get tickets. You'd swear to God, God had come down and had landed in it. But that's the human connection.
Yeah.
We're craving being together. Look at town in summer in Dublin and Drury Street and places like that. And we are craving this connection. And that's, if we design our cities to be denser, more compact, to share. If we share resources, and that's everything from green spaces to energy, we will have an amazing place to live, a compact place to live. And with that, when there's enough people there, you're going to get comedy clubs, you're going to get theatres, you're going to get music venues, you're going to get pubs, you're going to get restaurants, you're going to get coffee shops, you're going to get gyms, meeting places, groups. That's what we all love in life, and you get more of that if we're together.
Now let's head over to Blanchardstown and catch up with Wayne in his warm and incredibly energy efficient A1 rated home. Wayne, we're here in your lovely home in Blanchardstown. Tell us all about it, and when did you move in?
Yeah, so thanks very much for joining us. We moved in about 11 years ago. So the house was built in 1983. So when we moved in, the house, I would say, was in need of some repair. So I think it had been rented out before we moved in, and then the owners had decided to offload the house. So we were lucky. We were in a bidding war to get the house. So that was emotional at the time. And then when we moved in, we done lots of renovations and stuff. We put in new kitchens, a new boiler, decorating, carpets, floors, all of that type of stuff. So and then we haven't really done much since then. So it's about 11 years where we've only kind of done the basics, the odd kind of decorating and stuff, which led us to this kind of massive renovations that we've done now.
And are you from Blanchardstown, or how did you end up here?
Yeah, born and bred. So I come from an estate just kind of a kilometre away. So that's Sheepmoor, that's where I'm from. And then Audrey's a kilometre in the other direction. So that's where her parents are from. Lived here most of my life. I'd done about 6 years across in the UK until Audrey put the foot down and said it's time to go home, get a house, get a family, all that type of jazz. So we moved in with Audrey's parents for about a year so we could save up. And then, as I said, we got into a bidding war for this place when it was the time to buy. And then luckily we were able to get this place. So
how long were you living here before you had the kids? I know you have a bar in the back garden, so you've obviously had some good times in this house. And when do they come along after you moved in?
Yeah, so Cian is 8 now. So we probably 3 years of partying to the neighbours' dismay, I suppose. I think we were probably quite noisy up in the bar on more than one occasion. So yeah, we'd about 3 years of just us in the house. So I think we were kind of nesting at that point and getting the place ready. But the grand plan was to move in, start family, and then to get married. So we've done it in that sequence, probably backwards in relation to the church's requirements. But we're probably not overly religious. So that was the direction we went.
And obviously with parents living nearby, that was super handy for childcare.
yeah, essential. Like with my job, like it would be possible to move abroad and live somewhere else. And it's a discussion that comes up occasionally, but like you can't get those years back having grandparents and aunts and uncles around. Like it's just, it takes a village to bring up kids, and just their kind of friend circle with their cousins and stuff like that is so important. Or even the opportunity to spend time with grandparents, like I wouldn't want to take that away from them. So,
and coming in here this morning, I can get a sense of that. Like you can tell that this is a house that where people are welcome. Like you have a big barbecue, a lovely patio furniture. It kind of feels like a house where everyone's welcome. Your family, her family, friends, yeah. Parties in the bar.
Yeah, definitely. Probably less parties in the bar these days. I need to do a bit of walking there, and I suppose the neighbours wouldn't be too happy with me, but definitely barbecues and that type of thing. So every other week we would probably have people over and fire up the barbecue, a couple of drinks.
Lovely.
Some music, play it at a respectable level.
Yeah,
and switched
absolutely.
Off before curfew.
When's curfew?
No idea.
So 11 years later then, so you know the house inside out and you decide to do this big job. How did you stay motivated for those 11 years to save? And was there a vision in mind? Did you know what you wanted to do? Or how did it all evolve over time?
Yeah, I suppose you have to live within your means. So we wanted to put a dint in the mortgage just to take off some of the pressure from that perspective. I suppose maybe a bit traditional in that regard, like it's important that we own our home and maybe take some of that risk away. So we definitely wanted to put a dint in the mortgage. So once we'd kind of made inroads into the mortgage, we started to have a bit of a pot that we were building up over a couple of years to be able to do some of these improvements to the house. I suppose a personal thing that's important to me is the whole green agenda, like from an environmental perspective. Like it's important that we take steps to reduce our carbon emissions and that type of stuff. So I was very interested from that perspective. And then like it was just kind of happenstance a little bit as well. So we noticed that there was a contractor's van outside the neighbor's house one day, and me being nosy as I am, I had a conversation with the neighbor and I asked him, what's that about? And he was explaining that they had spoken to Churchfield, who was a one-stop shop for the energy improvements. So we got chatting to him and I was like, actually, I really like what you're talking about. And he sent me across all of his paperwork with the different quotes and the work content that they were going to do. And I got interested in it. So I made contact with Churchfield, and it was actually through that we organized to do both jobs at the same time. So when the work was being completed, the scaffolding went from their back garden across the back wall into my back garden. So we're actually doing both jobs at the same time, if you know what I mean.
So, okay, that's amazing. So yeah. Proper word of mouth.
Yeah, just like I said, it was kind of in my mind that I wanted to do it. It was just happenstance one day that I looked out the window and seen the van there. So I think the universe was talking to me at that stage, told me it was time. Yeah. The time was right to get it done. So.
And you'd been manifesting for 11 years. So
I was brilliant.
It was a sign.
11 years.
Yeah. And what sacrifices did you have to make, or if any, as a family for over those 11 years to get to the stage where you were in a position to get this massive home energy upgrade and renovation done?
Yeah, so like I suppose it'd be the winter where you would have felt it. Like I think the heating bills would have been excessive. Like particularly in a hall and landing space, it's quite an open space. And then we do have the skylights as well, which kind of acts as a bit of a heat vacuum. So what would happen is if you were sitting in the sitting room, we'd be in the evening comfortable watching a movie. Kids would go out, they'd open the door, wouldn't dream of closing the door. So as soon as they go out, it's just like pulling the heat out of the room. And it was just impossible to heat that kind of hall and landing space. So it made for the house to be cold in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're worried about the kids as well, like going to bed at night as well, like trying to heat the place. So ultimately, you end up leaving the heat on a lot longer than what you would want. Like going back again to what I said, like I'm quite focused from an environmental perspective. Like you don't want to have gas on during the night, like you're just increasing the carbon emissions as well. So
it was central heating that you had before?
Yeah, it was a combi gas boiler. Now, we had that installed when we moved in initially. That was kind of the best thing you could get. And it was a good system, in fairness. Like, you'd constant hot water. Like, sort of, the boiler would switch on as soon as you turn on the hot tap. So that was a benefit. But like I say, like, you are burning gas constantly. So, and a lot of it to try and keep the place warm.
Over those years, how did you and Audrey, your wife, stay on the same page and stay focused to get this done? Obviously, being freezing at night and freezing during the winter was a bit of a motivation.
Yeah, I suppose I'm a planner, so things have to happen in sequence. So like I said to you, like, the plan was, we're going to move back to Ireland, then we're going to buy a house, then we're going to have kids, then we're going to get married. So that's the way I approach most things. Like, I'll have a plan for things, and things need to happen in a sequence. So I didn't want us to, like, make massive borrowings and be in debt. Like, there's always a risk that you don't know what way the economy's going to go or what way my job would go. So I didn't want to have, like, a massive pot of debt. So I wanted to build up savings for us before we did it. So, like, I think Audrey was okay with that. Once she knew that there was a goal at the end of the path, I think she was okay.
God, you're very patient, because I know a lot of people would be like, oh no, I'll just take the loan out and do it now. Whereas you obviously were so focused and had a vision, and you were like, okay, I'm playing the long game. I'm going to save and get it done.
Yeah.
So I know you said you saw Churchfield over at your neighbour's and it was happenstance. What was the first step that you took in terms of getting this big job done? I know they gave you all the paperwork. So what was next then? To book in your time, or how did you plan? And what was the starting point, I suppose?
Yeah, so definitely kind of conversations with the neighbour to figure out what they'd done. When you do anything, like, you have to go investigate, you have to go shop around, you have to go do all of these different bits, and it's time consuming. Like, it's that on top of your job, that on top of keeping the house clean, that on top of keeping the kids occupied and all of that type of stuff. So I'll be honest, I basically lift and shifted what they had done. Do you know what I mean? We'd done a couple of checks to see if there was anybody cheaper, made contact with another one or two people. But once we knew that Churchfield were in the same ballpark, and they are a one-stop shop. So the benefit of using those guys was basically you contact them, they'll come in, organise the surveys for the home energy assessment. They'll give you your energy rating from a starting point. They'll come back with, they came back with a full list of all of the possible jobs you could get done. It's broken down by the cost of each individual job. It's broken down by what would be the improvement to your energy rating by each individual job. So it just makes it really painless from our perspective. Like, you're only dealing with one company. It's not like a string of contractors that you need to deal with. If there's any delays or anything, there's one man I need to call. It's not like 17 different contractors that are doing things. I go back to one person, and he then goes and speaks to the different contractors then.
And they're looking after all the grants as well. So you're not filling out that paperwork. That's all their job as well. Mm-hmm. So that takes, obviously, you have a busy life. You've got two small kids, you're working.
Yeah.
So that's another weight off your shoulder, I suppose, in terms of the benefits of going with a one-stop shop.
Definitely. And like, there's obviously paperwork that's required, but they literally send it back to you and say, like, fill out line 4, 7 and 11. And it's as simple as that. And then, like you mentioned, the grants, that's an important part. But in order to kind of finance some of this, there are low energy loans available. And like, when we had spoken to them about this, like, within a week, they had sent back all of the documentation that you need to be able to get this. And then it was just a case of making an appointment with the bank. That was done in 30 minutes. So that was a quick turnaround again.
So it's a really streamlined process.
To get it going, it takes some time.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you have to go through the different assessments. So the cogs are turning in terms of the different bodies that need to be contacted and the different assessments that are needed to be done. So the expectation is you're not going to get it done in a week. Like, it's going to take a period of time to get it set up initially and then for the work to be done.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Okay, so from first contact with Churchfield to now, how long was the whole process overall?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably about 4 months between initial contact and the work to start. So we actually started the work Christmas week, to Audrey's dismay.
Of course.
So they started pulling out.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, windows like literally 5 days before Christmas Day.
Right.
So it was horrific. Like, I was like, Audrey, just don't come back today.
Did you have a Christmas tree?
We had a Christmas tree. We had to pull it up to the corner there just to keep it away. You had to move all of the sofas and, yeah, all the furniture had to be moved.
So you didn't move out while the work was taking place? No, you stayed. And if you were doing it again, would you move out, or were you okay to stay?
No, like that was one part, like the windows and doors. So then that was done, and we had Christmas, and then into January then, like the next phases of the work can start to happen, but it all has to happen in a sequence. So like you would have like kind of first phase, second phase. So you would have like electricians that need to come in, and they need to do the work before the plumbers can come in.
Yeah.
And the plumbers come in, and then the solar panels can start. Do you know what I mean? So it's, I suppose it's dependent on people's means, but like there was about 6 months of work that took place. So we just weren't in a position to say we're going to move out of the house for 6 months. So unfortunately, we were stepping over contractors as they were working on the house, just trying to balance having a life.
Dust and, in your cornflakes.
Oh, the dust was horrific. It really was.
I'm dying to chat about the interiors, because after walking through the house, it is fab. But I want to go back in time a little bit to when Churchfield did your energy assessment and told you everything that you needed to get done.
Yeah.
Did you get a shock, or were you expecting to need that much work to be done?
Well, they give you a shopping list, and you can choose what you want to get done from it. So, like, I suppose the question back to us was, did we want to get everything done? Or did we want to maybe cherry pick some of the items and go that direction? Now, we just chose to get everything done. Like, we're still relatively young, so we thought we'd get a good return on it. Like, we've still got many years left in this house, we hope. So we thought if we get it done now, we should get a good return on it over the years. There was a lot that needed to be done. The initial energy rating, I think, was C2. And it's up to A1 now. It's actually beyond A1. It's actually a passive house standard now. So when you look at the assessment, it will give you an output of CO2 per meter squared per annum. And ours is actually in a negative number.
Yeah, because some newly built houses aren't even at that level. So you've gone past that. That's incredible.
Yeah, no, it was a great result. We didn't think it would go that high. Churchfield didn't think it would go that high either. So they said, look, we think we'll get you to about maybe A2 or A1, but they don't do the assessment. It's an independent person that comes in. And when he came around and done the assessment, he was like, actually, you've probably gone over and above here. Like, this is huge. And then Churchfield called me up very excited. I'm like, I've got really good news. I'm like, yeah, you're passive house standard. So we were really pleased with that.
Okay, so yeah, you were saying all the electricity you're using is free.
Yeah, definitely. So there's things you can do. So you can be savvy about when you use electricity. So you can set up an agreement with the energy companies. You can go onto an EV rate, and it means between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. that the energy price is like 8 cents per kilowatt hour, which is extremely cheap. Like during the day, it might be like 25 or 26. So what we do is we charge the battery in the house at that time. So it means first thing in the morning, we're working off kind of really cheap electricity as we're kind of cooking for the kids, getting them set up for the day, or I'm up in the office. Yeah, so it's really cheap first thing in the morning. And then by the time the sun comes up then, that's topping the battery back up, and it's kind of feeding what you're consuming then as well. So then when it goes to the evening time and the sun's gone down, again, you've kicked into the battery. So in theory, depending on how sunny it is on that particular day and how busy you are around the house, you've never really been pulling from the grid during the day when it's expensive. You're only pulling from the grid at night when it's only like 8 cents a kilowatt hour or so.
And are you conscious of that in your day to day? Are you like, oh, I'm going to put the washing machine on now because it's free? Or is that something you kind of just forget about because you know you're getting good value for money anyway?
Yeah, I'm laughing here because I'd like to say no, I'm not. But my wife, it's a good thing Audrey isn't here because she'd be kicking me here. So
have
yeah,
you got an app?
I have an app.
Okay.
I love the app. So the app gives you like when you're using your energy, how much you've used, what the return is for that particular day. It breaks it down into a kind of money value as well. So yeah, I love the app. But yeah, it would be like even the new dishwasher we got, you can program it to come on at different times. Mm-hmm. So it's smart. So we program it to come on at 2 a.m. So when you're using the really cheap electricity, so it'd be that type of thing that we'd be focused on.
You've a passive home. You've also got a smart home, yeah.
There's a smart home, yeah, to a certain extent, yeah.
It's going to start talking to you now.
Yeah.
Good morning, Wayne.
Yeah. With the washing, as an example, like I hate using the dryer. So we would watch the forecast and do the washing on a day where it's sunny so you can actually put it out the back. And the clothes smell nicer.
You said sustainability is important to you. So obviously you've done probably one of the biggest things one can do to be energy efficient and sustainable, which is to do a home energy upgrade and make your house energy efficient. But how else do you bring sustainability into your lifestyle? Is it something, I know you have an EV out there.
Yeah.
You know, that's another major thing. You're cutting down on your emissions.
Yeah.
So how else do you live sustainably day to day?
Well, I suppose the car is obviously the big one, which you mentioned. Like lots of things. So like I'd be quite funny about like single use plastics as an example. So like we all have water bottles. Mm-hmm. So rather than going into the shop and buying plastic constantly, we'd be very focused on that. So definitely avoiding single-use plastics. And even in terms of waste in the house. So like we did get new furniture recently. To be fair, some of it was in need of binning, to be honest with you. Like the sofa is an example. Like we'd had it for 10 years. But we did give it to somebody who wanted to upcycle it. So we gave it to them for free. They took it away, they cleaned it up, and somebody else got use out of it. So we're focused on that. And then we have, in the sitting room, we have a sideboard and a nest of tables. Now, part of this is because Audrey's aunt had given them to us, and she's unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. So there's emotional value to it. But over the last while, I've kind of sanded everything down, and then Audrey painted it. But it looks brand new. So yeah, just we don't need waste if there doesn't need to be waste.
Yeah, you're mindful of it. Yeah, and I suppose you're making such a contribution. You don't want to be going around buying a load of plastic bottles every day or
yeah
that's amazing. Let's get on to the interiors now. So you did your big home energy upgrade, so the house is a passive house now. Mm-hmm. It's lovely and warm and cozy. So then you focused on the interiors of the house.
Yeah.
Is that something you were more into, or your wife was more into, or did you do it together?
No, Audrey did all of this.
Okay. So,
she's the brains of the outfit. So, yeah, she selected kind of what she wanted, picked out the doors. She decided she wanted the pocket doors here because I think it just opens the room up. It makes it nice and sociable. Because if you have the kind of swinging doors, it kind of cuts this space off here. So,
Yeah,
so she knew what she wanted. She knew what she wanted. The banisters, the floors, all Audrey's gig.
And I suppose having lived here for so long, you knew the house so well. So you knew what would work, what wouldn't work, how you want to make the most use of your space. You've got small kids. You want to be able to cook the dinner and let them watch telly and be able to keep an eye on them. So that's something that you had so much time to know and to decide how you wanted to live in the home. So how is living in the home now that it's been renovated and it's a passive house now, how is living in the home with you and your family different to how it was before?
I would certainly say it's a lot more comfortable. Now, it would be interesting to see. I think the proof in the pudding will be when we get to the winter. Like, obviously, when it gets to the colder temperatures. Like, I know the house is going to be a lot more comfortable. Like, it's basically an igloo now in terms of heat retention. So yeah, the winter I think will be the definite piece. It's nice because like even aunts and uncles would be like, oh, let me come over and see your new house. And everybody's been very complimentary of the work that's done. And Audrey did put a lot of work into the kind of decorating and design and what it was that she wanted. So it's great to see it, that it's kind of come out to look this good. And then
did you have a housewarming?
No, we didn't actually. Initially, when we moved in, we certainly did. And we had a bar warming when we kicked off the bar.
Okay.
We actually named it after my dad that day. He hasn't passed away, by the way. Just to be clear.
He's still able to enjoy it.
He's still able to enjoy it, yeah.
Is there anything you would have done differently?
Nothing major. Even though I said like we had a great experience with Churchfield, they did a great job. There's little things that would happen, like confusion about was this included or was it not included, and there was a couple of discussions on this piece. There'd be minor pieces on that, but I suppose with having done work in the house before, like that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So there's nothing that I would say would have been massive that we made a mistake. I think one of the things that we said was, certainly when we moved in, we had just paid the deposit on the house. We did have some money, but we didn't have a huge amount of money. Like we had spent a lot when we bought the house on the deposit and that type of thing. So we maybe had to cut corners at that time. So some of the jobs that were done may not have been to like a high standard. Well, they were to an okay standard, but like we certainly paid for it over the years. Like certainly with the company we had in to do the front door and back door, they done an extremely poor job, and we shouldn't have let that go. But so this time round, we're like, make sure that we use reputable contractors, again, another reason for going with the one-stop shop, like we can go back to them if there's ever any issues. Even now, like if anything, there's any issue with the solar panels, we can still contact Churchfield and they're very responsive. They'll come back to us.
Yeah, so buy well, buy once.
Yeah, I think so. Like it's that was important to us. So get it done with good contractors and then don't cut corners on the things that you want. Like even with the kitchen, like as an example, Audrey wanted, I think it's quartz worktops and the splashback wanted to be quartz, etc. Like that was all really expensive. And we looked at other options and I could see that Audrey was, it didn't make too much of a difference to me, but I could see Audrey, oh no, we'll go with this one because the other one's too expensive. Do you want the other one? She said, well, I'd really like it. Well, then get it.
Yeah, because it'll last then.
Yeah, just get it done. We cut corners last time and then there's things that catch your eye then. You'll just be sitting there and you'll be like, I should have got that done.
Yeah.
So this time around, we're just like, get it done to a high standard. So we won't have to come back then in a couple of years and say, retro change it again.
For other homeowners in a similar position to you or beforehand, what would your advice be to them? And would you recommend people go through this whole process?
Yeah, I suppose in our decision process, like there was a couple of reasons why we needed to do it. Like, so again, like the green agenda, but we were in a position where we had to decorate the house anyway. So our windows and doors weren't in good position. So we knew we needed to get that done anyway. So we knew we had that pocket of cost that was coming. So it just made sense to do it all together and get it done with that kind of one-stop shop. So that's kind of part of our process. So the advice I would give to others is if you need
to... Say for 11 years.
Yeah, well, it depends on everybody's means, I suppose. Yeah, depending on what they have. I wouldn't... And even with the saving piece, again, it depends on your means because the loan that you can get, it's I think it's like 3.5%. So it's as low as a mortgage.
They're low interest, yeah.
It's a really low interest. Mm-hmm. So the government have definitely doubled down on encouraging people to try and do this work. And it's for a really good cause. So the piece I would say to people, if you have the means to do it, like do go through the SEAI to avail of the grants. You get money back from it. Depending on your personal circumstance, if you work, if you have kids, you might not have the time to go out and source all the contractors yourself. The one-stop shop just takes all that headache away. So look at the loans, look at the grants, look at the one-stop shops. It's definitely the most economical and time-savvy way to do it, I would say.
Was there any stage you had to put your foot down and they were saying, look, we think you should do this, this is great, other people do this, and you were like, no, not for me?
No, I don't think so. Like the folks, the contractors that came out, like they were all really knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. Like they knew their stuff. Like they're doing many houses per week. Like I'm surprised because as I walk around, you'll see the scaffolding up and like you get a full appreciation for how many people are actually getting this done. And Churchfield has spoken to us about like, look, we have this amount of jobs ongoing at the moment. So these guys are constantly going in and out of homes. So they know their stuff. So from my perspective, I don't work in the kind of building trade. So we were quite trusting of what they were telling us. Now, obviously, you check, you critique and stuff like that. But all of the recommendations they had given us in terms of the work that you should get done, the finishes that we should get done. So they came back to us with recommendations, like what render did you want to use outside, colours. They came back to us with the charts and stuff like that. So
you were happy to just take their lead?
Yeah, take the lead. And then it was just the kind of final bells and whistles that we would need to decide on, like door colours, window colours, the colour of the walls outside, that type of stuff. So I think they made all of that really painless from our perspective. Like they took all the heavy lift and we trusted them and they didn't let us down, in fairness. They've done a great job.
Where is your favourite place in the house to have a pint, or if you don't drink a coffee or a tea, where do you sit down and go, ah, this is my home and I love it, it's warm and cosy?
So definitely on the sofa. So we've always had these kind of L-shaped sofas. And the corner is definitely my space. So,
feet up?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So if we come down there and the kids are in, I'm like, oh, that's daddy's corner. Out you go. Now, most of the time they don't move, so I'll have to wait until they go to bed to get my corner back. But yeah, that's the comfy space. We've always been a sitting room family. Like we'll eat in here, or if people come up and they're having tea or coffee or whatever, like it's typically in the kitchen. But certainly family time, we're always in the sitting room together. We'll play the Switch, we're playing Mario together, or we're watching movies together. It's always in the sitting room. That's the kind of hub of the family activity.
The heart of the home, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's comfy.
Talking about bills, and I know you said that you had the heating on quite a bit I suppose you were bringing your newborn babies home to a cold enough house. You would have had your heating on quite a bit throughout the winter. How do your bills compare before the home energy upgrade to now?
I suppose a couple of things to point out on that. So we obviously would have had the gas, and the gas was for heating and then cooking as well. So we had the hob was on gas. And then we obviously had the car, which would have been charging as well. So if I look at the gas and electric combined bills.
And for people who can't see, you actually have a spreadsheet.
Unfortunately, no. It's actually for the tax return every year, because I work from home, you can claim a piece.
Oh
right. So that's
God.
My excuse for
okay.
having this.
Yeah, whatever you say.
I know, it's sad. But yeah, so
do you have a mug that says I love spreadsheets?
I love spreadsheets, yeah.
You do?
I'm all about AI at the moment as well, unfortunately.
So okay.
I'm a bit the geeky when it comes to that stuff. So yeah, we would have been looking at combined bills, electric and gas, up around 2,500 per year.
Okay.
So compare that to now. So obviously we got the work done, I think we finished up around March. So we've had one bill that includes 2 months where it was installed. So we did an initial bill, but it was partially before we had the works done and afterwards. So we kind of disregard that one. So, and that covered the months of April and May. And you recall April and May were particularly good.
Yeah.
So my bill for those 2 months was zero. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it was a credit on the bill. So the credit on the bill, I think, was about €65. So that will roll forward into the next bill. So if we're looking at that in comparison to the entirety of last year, we're paying about 2,500 for energy. And now these 2 months were zero plus a credit that will roll over. I can see as well, so there's an app, so I can see what our consumption has been across June and July. So the next bill will be zero, and there will be an additional credit then that will roll into the next month.
So it will eventually pay for itself over time?
It will do, yeah.
So you're absolutely sitting there like Christmas morning waiting for your electricity bill to come in the door, and you're like, yes!
I do get excited when the bill comes in. They go to Audrey Force and she's like, wait, and the bill came, so.
And speaking of the kids, Cian and Ada, Cian is a big reptile fan.
Yeah.
And we were in his bedroom and we saw his turtles.
Yeah.
And that can't be cheap for someone paying for electricity, because obviously they have to be in a hot environment.
Yeah.
So even your pets are benefiting from this home energy upgrade.
Definitely, yeah. They've given me that positive feedback as well to say they're happy with the outcome. There's Harry and Larry are the two tortoises. There's another stuffed tie up there as well. He's Barry. So Harry, Larry and Barry.
Okay.
Yeah. So that light is on from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. So there's two lights. There's one UV light and then there's a heat lamp as well. So they're on constantly. So yeah, we haven't seen a blip in that piece as well. Like that's all consumed in the last 2 months. And as I said, the bill came in at zero plus €65 or €70 credit as well. So
will there be more reptiles entering the household?
No. What we didn't realise when we got the second one is they typically live by themselves. So when we put Harry in, Larry was the first one there. Harry didn't come until 2 weeks afterwards. Larry was a bit territorial.
Okay.
So he was coming over and headbutting them. So we got a little bit frightened at the start. But then they became friends. And you'll see them, they'll often kind of sleep head by head with their heads out, which means they're relaxed.
Aww.
If they're frightened, they'll put the head inside the shell. So they've become friends now after all. So it was a bit rocky at the start, but they got there.
And they're enjoying their new warm and cozy home.
Yeah.
So this is your forever home, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we're happy here. Like this is the area we're from. Like it's, as I said, we're located close to the people we want to be close to. So yeah, I think so, yeah.
That's it for this episode and for season 6, but stay subscribed and we'll be back as soon as we can for another season full of tips, advice and great interviews. Thanks a million to all our guests this season and, of course, to the podcast studios. As always, if you'd like to find out more about any of the grants or schemes mentioned in this episode, you can head over to the SEAI website and there are links in the show notes. Finally, we also have a special bonus episode on the feed all about green loans and financing, so check that out if you're getting serious about your renovation plans. Thanks a million for listening.